Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI reflects on the mystery of suffering and issues an open invitation to conversion. We celebrate International Women's Day, highlighting the desperate plight of hundreds and thousands of enslaved and exploited women who walk the very streets we live in. And film critic Peter Malone talks about a film with a strong conspiracy plot, which sees the return of Mel Gibson in front of the camera. Pope Benedict XVI reflected on the mystery of suffering and said that the possibility of conversion entails that we learn to read the events of life in the light of faith, animated by the holy fear of God. The Pope's invitation to conversion came on Sunday as he addressed the pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square for the Angelus prayer. Lydia O'Kane has this report.
In a St. Peter's Square brimming with pilgrims and tourists, Pope Benedict at his Sunday Angelus had an invitation to make. It was a call to conversion, a theme in keeping with the season of Lent and with this week's Gospel.
The readings of today's liturgy invite all of us to embrace conversion and to be humble in allowing the Lord to prepare us to bear more fruit. Our cooperation with the Lord often demands great sacrifice. But the fruit which that conversion bears always leads to freedom and joy. May we experience these great gifts of God.
From Luke's Gospel, Jesus, explained the Pope, invites us to read events such as the killing of some Galileans inside the temple on the order of Pontius Pilate differently, placing them in a perspective of conversion. Pope Benedict even looked at recent events such as the severe flooding in France and offered his closeness to those affected. Such tragedies and sad events, said the Holy Father, should not arouse our curiosity or desire to discover would-be offenders. With God's help, they must give us an opportunity to reflect and overcome the illusion that we can live without God and strengthen our resolve to change our lives. The Holy Father recalled how, in the face of sin, God turns out to be full of mercy, calling on sinners to avoid evil, to grow in his love, and to help concretely a neighbour in need, to express the joy of grace, and not suffer eternal death. God, underlined the Pope, is manifested in different ways in the lives of everyone, and in order to recognise his presence, it is necessary that we approach him conscious of our misery and with deep respect. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. The 8th of March is the day we mark International Women's Day. It's the day especially set aside to celebrate the economic, political and social achievements of women, past, present and future. It goes without saying that the new millennium has witnessed a significant change and attitudinal shift in both women's and society's thoughts about women's equality and emancipation. And many today feel that all the battles have been won for women, as there are more women in the boardroom and there is greater equality in legislative rights. But it is an undeniable fact that women are still not paid equally to their male counterparts. Women are still not present in equal numbers in business or politics. And globally, women's education, health, and the violence against them is worse than that of men. Much worse than that of men. And although there are many angles of this reality on which to shine the light, today I have chosen to talk about the tragic predicament of hundreds of thousands of girls and women who are enslaved and exploited by powerful rings of criminals who traffic in sex and slavery. To do this, I spoke to Sister Eugenia Bonetti, a remarkable woman, whom I was lucky to catch here in Rome in between conferences, lectures, and the work she does with political, social, and religious institutions, persuading them to support her cause.
About yourself, your background, where you grew up, why you decided to become a nun, when did you decide to become a nun?
Very good. These are very good questions that are helping me to remind myself of my roots. I am a consolata missionary sister. Originally, I'm from Milan. I was only 14 in 1953 when I read on a missionary magazine that a consolata missionary sister was killed in Kenya. It was the time of independence, and so there was a lot of disturbances. And this sister, who spent 32 years of her missionary life in Kenya, offered her life completely, and she was killed. And at a certain moment, I really felt the desire and the inspiration of saying, she's no longer alive, she can no longer work for people. She has decided to do it for so many years. So that place is vacant. I want to take it up.
Yes, the story of that missionary sister made such a deep impression on the 14-year-old girl. She did what she could to find out about the Sisters of the Consolata, and 6 years later, she entered their congregation in Turin.
So when I entered the congregation in 1959, after 6 months since I read that story of that sister who passed away, a second sister, Eugenia, because that first sister was called Sister Eugenia Cavallo, a second sister, Eugenia, also passed away on the same day at a distance of 6 years. She was very young. She had a cancer. So when I read, as soon as I arrived in Turin to enter the congregation, I read the story that even the second one passed away. I said, I will be the third one.
My next question came naturally. Is Eugenia your baptismal name?
No, my baptism name is Maddalena, Mary Magdalene. And this, yes, very fitting, exactly, because names are very significant. Yeah, but even the name that was given in religion, for me it's very significant because I followed the footsteps of the first sister Eugenia that was killed. And so I was also lucky because after my formation, my preparation, I left for Kenya. I was sent to work in Kenya where that the first sister Eugenia was killed. And I continued to work for 24 years. I was so happy, so well integrated in that environment with women especially. You know, just to be with women, helping them to overcome their poverty and also helping them to become aware of their role, of their dignity, of their life, of their strength, their richness.
So Sister Eugenia spent 24 years in a mission in a beautiful rural area of Kenya. She was a religious education advisor and was fully involved in African life.
And I was so happy to be there. But all at once, something happened that I was called to come back to Italy and to become a missionary in my own country, which was not so easy for me. That was my world, was my family. I was so happy. But now, with obedience, I have to come back because I was asked to work in a Caritas drop-in center in Turin for immigrant women that early 90s started to come from different countries looking for a better way of life.
Sister Eugenia told me that in Italy in the first years of the 1990s, it was mostly Nigerian and Polish women who were trafficked and forced into prostitution, most of them between 14 and 18 years of age. The numbers were growing steadily, and there was an urgent need for help.
But for me at the beginning, it was not easy. I could not understand why, because I had the impression that I betrayed my missionary vocation. I thought at that time that to be a missionary was only to be in Africa. And so now to find myself in the big city of Turin, it was so difficult for me to understand to be there. Even though I accepted to be there, my mind was not there. I was always in Africa. Until one day something happened in my life at that drop-in center. I met for the first time an African woman, a Nigerian woman, that came to ask for help. Maria, for me, has really become, you know, a very important person, a symbol that helped me to change my life.
Maria, Sister Eugenia told me, was sick. A doctor had sent her to the drop-in center in search of help. But she was the one who really helped Sister Eugenia come to terms with her new mission.
I used to see these women along the street, and I was annoyed with them because I said, what are these African women doing in Italy? Standing on the street, looking for clients. I had no idea of what was behind it. And so I became also annoyed like many other people because I thought that they were there because they wanted to be there. But Maria changed my mind. Maria helped me to understand that they were there because they had no other choice. They were forced to be there. That there was all kind of different organization, criminal organization. They used their poverty. They used their situation in order to get money and in order to provide a special kind of service for the ones asking for it because they were ready to pay for it. So now when I met Maria, and it took some time for me before realizing, you know, the whole situation. But Maria became my catechist. She became my teacher. We helped her to regain health, but she helped me to regain my vocation.
So Sister Eugenia readjusted her vision of missionary life, no longer in Africa, but in her own country.
I was in crisis, in deep crisis, because I didn't know what to do before. But she helped me to understand the mission was no longer geography, but mission was where these women, in a very special women that, you know, I was so happy to live with them in Africa, and now these women were in my own country.
They were
the same women in my own country, but in such a different trauma, drama, terrible situation, exploitation, humiliation.
In Sister Eugenia's own words, she became a missionary of the night and of the street.
I move around all over the world nowadays just to highlight the problem of these women, to become the voice of these women, because they have no voice, they have no rights, they are just humiliated, they are just frustrated, they are just treated like rotten people because they are all broken.
Sister Eugenia was careful to point out that nowadays there are different forms of human trafficking for different reasons and different purposes. But she and her sisters work with those who are exploited sexually.
Being sisters, so much concern for the well-being of women. We know the terrible drama these women live, especially when they are forced to give up the most precious gift. That is their femininity, their motherhood, their youth, being women, to be forced to sell themselves, not for their own sake, not for their own gain, but for the gain and the sake of somebody else.
And in the years, there has been an evolution in the mechanisms of human trafficking for sexual exploitation. In the beginning, Sister Eugenia explained, the girls used to be brought over in groups, under the guise of pilgrims, only to immediately have their documents taken away and end up on the streets. When authorities realised what was happening, visas for pilgrimages stopped being issued, and traffickers found other ways of getting the women across, like flying them first to other countries, or, as the majority do at this moment in history, getting them to walk across the desert and sail the sea, with great risk to their lives. All this, of course, with the promise of a good job and extra money to be able to send home.
The biggest group that we have in Italy, it is from Nigeria, 59%. At the moment, we have between 50, 70, even we can go even as far as 100,000 women, immigrant women working on the streets.
And the fact that they are all illegal makes it very difficult to get exact figures and to have a clear picture of their situation, What we do know, says Sister Bonetti, is that the organizations behind the phenomenon know exactly how to go about it.
There is a well-organized organization. They know how to move because there is a lot of people earning from these women, getting money. There is a lot of corruption at all levels, airport, embassies, immigration offices, taxi driver, people renting houses where these people can stay. There is a strong chain, and the chain has many links, many rings, and all these links have names. And among these names, there are also victims and their poverty. There are also clients with their frustration, with their wealth, that they can do anything they want with the money at the expenses of these women who are really treated like rags. They are used and thrown away, used and thrown away.
Much of Sister Eugenia's work is connecting and communicating with the different links in that chain. She told me that she has just been to Libya, which is where most of the girls who cross the desert stay before undertaking the final leg of their journey.
Because for us as sisters working in this field, it is very important to work in connection with all the organization that are dealing, they are concerned for this. And we are women and want to be women for women. And we are working also with sisters in different countries of origin in order to link countries of origin, transit and destination. Libya is one of the countries of transit. Origin, we are already very well established with the sisters in Nigeria. And they are working with us, prevention, reintegration, when we send back girls who want to go back to be with their own families and to get in contact with them once again. But we also need to be in contact with the sisters and with the organization working on transit.
A transit, Sister Eugenia says, that too often is the last chapter in their lives.
Many, many of them die in the desert. And if they don't die in the desert, they can die as they cross
the sea,
on the boats. Now the sea has become the new cemeteries for thousands of migrants, women and men and children who tried for a better life, who tried to risk their life in order to give some help to their families. And this is what is happening to them.
Going back a bit, the reason religious sisters first got involved in helping the women who found themselves on the streets here in Italy is because, not knowing who to turn to, many of them knocked on the doors of the convents. And the sisters soon came to realize that society was facing a new crisis.
And some of the sisters who could really see that there was something very special, that we had to give attention to this new phenomenon, because nobody knew this phenomenon, because there was a great request. And that is why, you know, because there was the offering, you know, these poor women, they were taken. And because they had no other opportunities for any better life, because there was the request. So the traffickers used these two realities together. From one side, the push because of the poverty, and from the other side, the other push because of another request. Yes. And so now these two poverties, one was material poverty, and the other one is the poverty of values, of situation in life that join together. And now what we destroy? We destroy the life of these young people. We destroy the life of these women completely, but we destroy also the life of our own families. Because even clients are slaves of another situation.
Slavery, says Sister Eugenia, is the right word to use. These women are slaves, with shackles that are almost impossible to be rid of.
These women are asked by their madams, by the traffickers, in order to regain their freedom. They are asked nowadays to pay 60, 70, 80,000 euros. And now, in order to pay all this money, these women, they have to undergo not less than 4,000 sexual encounters with a man.
In the first years, it was the police who would bring the girls to the sisters. Today, the sisters' network extends throughout Italy with shelters and drop-in centres.
Now, at the moment, we have in Italy about 100 family homes, shelters,
across Italy,
run by sisters. All different congregations, 70, 75 congregations that have opened their congregations to the new challenge of today. And in their own houses, in their own buildings, where these girls could stay as long as it is needed. So now we started giving protection, training them, giving them lessons to acquire a profession, but also to learn the language. But there was a main big problem. We could not give a legality.
So in 1997, the Religious Sisters, Caritas, and a few other organizations held a groundbreaking conference in Rome to which all women parliamentarians were invited.
We wanted them to hear what was happening on the street, because everybody could see them, but nobody was aware of what was really happening. And so now, from what the sisters, Caritas, could share with them, they realized that the problem was big. And at a certain moment, we said, we have done our part. Now it is up to you. We need a legal status for these women in order to regain them fully, to help them to regain their dignity, their freedom, because they are still vulnerable.
Soon afterwards, a law was passed, granting these victims of human trafficking the possibility of requesting a renewable 6-month work permit, allowing them to acquire an identity and the chance for emancipation. Today, Sister Eugenia says, we work in cooperation with the Nigerian embassy that grants many of the women new passports and the possibility of building a new life. And subsequent cooperative efforts with the US Embassy to the Holy See have seen further progress in prevention and preparation, including training courses for religious sisters involved in this very particular work. But, she says, there is much still to be done, especially in raising awareness and sensitivity on the side of our well-to-do society.
Because you simply have money, and you think that with your money you can buy even a body of a minor or the poverty of a woman, because each one of us have been created with the same dignity. So nobody has the right to buy the dignity of another person. It's something that is so great, so important. So now we have to make people to understand, and to start also from with young people to realize and to appreciate relationship, respect for one another, for their own selves, for their own life, and also for the life of other people. Because each one of us have been created in the image of God, and no one has the right to treat another human being as a slave.
And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at CIGNIS, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he talks about a work first screened in 1985 by the BBC as a 6-part television series. It was directed by Martin Campbell, who has now returned to the script, adapted for the big screen.
Hi, Dad. I'm going to come home for a few days. I love you.
The Edge of Darkness and Mel Gibson. What are we to say?
He looks just like his old self, I must say. Although, as you notice, his face is much more lived in than it was.
He just turned 54 this last month, so he's not as young as he used to be, and he's not Mad Max anymore. But I hadn't realised, but somebody noted that he hadn't been starring in a film since 2002.
Although he's been directing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he directed The Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto, so yes, he hasn't been inactive, but I should, I suppose, put a kind of editorial parenthesis that he seems to have been making a mess of his life in real life, which is, you know, is a terrible thing, and I don't know where he goes from here. But anyhow, he's back in front of the camera in Edge of Darkness.
An interesting, very convoluted plot in this story, it seems to me.
Yes, although one of the other reviewers challenged me whether I'd understood the plot completely, and I thought there was at a stage where, yes, I did, but you have to work on it. Apparently, in the original BBC series, which I've never seen, which I would have liked to have seen, you have 6 hours, so plenty of time to develop characters and plot. Here you have just under 2 hours, so a bit convoluted, but it's one of those conspiracy theory films, so you have to expect it.
Tell us a little bit about the story, just as, well, you know, as little as we need to know.
All right. Well, Mel's, he's a Boston detective, much calmer than he is in the Lethal Weapon film,
just as
you'll
well.
Be glad to know.
Yes.
But almost at the beginning, his daughter is gunned down on the doorstep of their home. And it's presumed that he's the target because of his work as a policeman.
There are still a lot of unanswered questions, but it appears Detective Thomas Craven was the intended target.
And it gradually emerges, although enough clues are given before the murder. We've listened to the daughter speaking to her father, and we know that she is the target.
Mr. Craven, we have things to talk about.
Like your name and what you're doing here?
Like who shot your daughter?
And so he then goes on a quest to try to understand what happens, where she worked at a nuclear plant.
You want to know what my daughter did here?
What she did was classified.
Emma Charlotte Craven was flagged as a possible threat to the United States of America.
Which contributes to the economy of Massachusetts, as the senator and the manager all keep telling us. But there are various dark things lurking in the background, and a huge conspiracy, so I'd perhaps better leave it at there, and people who enjoy that kind of thing will be interested to follow it through.
I'm the guy with nothing to lose. Fasten your seatbelt.
I get the feeling you enjoyed it.
I did. I like that kind of film. I suppose if I were to be given an option between conspiracy and comedy, I'd tend to choose the conspiracy. I'd have to say that it looks very interesting, and the plant looks marvellous. It's, I'd say, recreated in the computer graphics, but a wonderful view out over Massachusetts. And Danny Houston is the suave and smooth manager of the whole plant, who we guess will be the villain, and of course he is.
Cases like these are never solved. You just never can connect A to B.
How do you know that?
Because I'm usually the guy that stops you connecting A to B.
So there's ultimately a lot of confrontations and some developments that we don't expect, so that keeps the interest there.
Well, you had better decide whether you're hanging on the cross or banging in the nails.
You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.